The case for argument is Roberts versus CSX Transportation. Mr. Kimberly.
May it please the Court, Michael Kimberly on behalf of CSX Transportation. Your Honors, I'd like to begin by focusing the Court on what was missing in this case. There was no evidence in this case that Perry was
traveling. What was missing was your lawyer in the district court.
Well, Your Honor, although...
He blew it.
We recognize...
These instructions are terrible, and he didn't object.
Although that's true, Your Honor, I think we win under.
I don't know why. Why should an appellate court bail out CSX? You can't hire a competent lawyer. Why?
Well, Your Honor, there's.
Why don't we redo a little tort case? Well, not so little, but why redo a tort case because you had an incompetent lawyer? Sue the lawyer.
Your Honor, respectfully, whether the evidence is sufficient to sustain the verdict. Ultimately doesn't turn on what standard applies here. We think even if the case had properly been tried, certainly it wasn't, but if it had been properly tried as a negligence per se case, we still would prevail because there's no evidence supporting even a verdict under a negligence per se theory of the case. That's because there was no evidence, as we argued in our opening brief, that Perry was traveling at any speed.
I don't understand. Their case, I mean, it's just simple-minded. But their case is this fellow was driving on the wrong side of the street. That's their whole case, wrong side of the street. And your lawyer just didn't contest that, right? It just had his testimony. He says, well, I'm only going 20 and hit black ice. That's all he had.
Respectfully, Your Honor, it wasn't our burden to contest it. It was the plaintiff's burden to provide evidence supporting it, and that's what we're here today.
Well, there's some evidence. They've skidded across the road and whacked the other car.
Right. So the evidence is that Perry's truck encountered a patch of ice, that he lost control over the patch of ice and slid.
It's like hitting. You know, look, you hit a car from the rear, and. There's the usual assumption is you hit it from the rear, you're at fault. That's not the law, but that's how people think about these things.
Well, sir.
And so you have to put in some other evidence about the black ice or what have you, or police reports.
Well, certainly there was evidence on that, Your Honor. Perry testified that there was that the ice was on the road and that he didn't see it. And certainly if there had been
well,
a rear end.
Well, that's the problem with black ice, right? It's invisible. So how exactly do you testify that you saw black ice, which you couldn't see? I mean,
well, there's no dispute, Your Honor, that in this case, that Perry's truck lost control over ice. Now, it's
no,
true, apart
from... All the evidence is that he crossed into the wrong lane. That's the only evidence.
That's not so, Your Honor. In fact, the accident report prepared by Officer Chalice indicates that the road conditions were icy and snowy and that the car slid over ice into oncoming traffic. And that was consistent with Perry's account of the accident, Perry being the only actual eyewitness of the accident.
But it depends, you know, how fast is he driving? Is he being careful? When he hits a skid, does he turn the steering wheel the right direction?
That's right, Your Honor.
I mean, you don't have a license to hit other cars just because it's bad weather conditions, right?
No, of course not. And that's not our argument. Our argument simply is that there's no evidence establishing what would have been reasonable under the circumstances, or that Perry was doing anything other than that. The only evidence is that Perry was driving 20 miles per hour, had recently turned right onto Rockville Road, encountered a patch of ice, and lost control of his vehicle and slid into oncoming traffic. That is virtually all the evidence establishes in this case.
What was the jury with given that evidence? What the instructions? Mm-hmm. What did the jury have to do that they you think they did more than they could?
Well, I think given the way the case was argued to the jury, it seems to us most likely that they concluded that he was driving on the wrong side of the road.
Right.
That seems to me to be the result of...
And that he hadn't shown the excuse. That's the...
Well, but of course it's not his burden to show...
He did, but not under the instructions, yes, right?
Well, yeah. Certainly the instructions...
And the violation was without excuse or justification, which sounds as if that's a burden on the defendant.
That's true, Your Honor.
The verdict is consistent with the instructions. Not consistent with the law of negligence, but it's consistent with the instructions.
The evidence, so 2 points, Your Honor. First, vis-a-vis the sufficiency of the evidence argument, the question isn't how the jury was instructed. It's what the proper legal standard is.
It is.
I'm sorry.
If the verdict is in conformity with the instructions, you have to show that the instructions were wrong.
Your Honor,
if you just apply the instructions, the instructions say if you're driving on the wrong side, you're liable unless you have an excuse. Now, Perry offered an excuse, but the jury didn't have to believe his excuse.
Your Honor, that certainly is how the jury was instructed, but Propotnick versus St. Louis, a Supreme Court case, dealt with precisely this question, a question in which the petitioner had preserved a sufficiency of the evidence arguments on a motion for a directed verdict and a motion JNOV at the...
Look,
at the
you can't the case. Sucker the jury by consenting to erroneous instructions and then argue that if the instructions had been correct, the jury could not have reached this verdict because the instructions would have defined the liability differently.
Wouldn't you have to rely on clear error that there was, again, it's a manifest injustice that it was clear error to give the instruction? That's the only thing you can rely on if you're talking about kicking the instruction off. Because
with respect to the instructions, that's
right. Judge Posner is correct. I mean, the instruction told the jury to do what they did. If the instruction is so bad that a miscarriage of justice, it shocks the conscience of the court, I think, and others, it scares the hell out of the Chief Justice. Up until fairly recently, it was my understanding, erroneous instruction or clear error was available only in criminal cases, but recently, I think for the last 5 years, 7 years, it also covers civil cases where it's manifest. So that's your argument, it seems to me.
Well, that's our argument with respect to the jury instructions. That is not our argument with respect to
yeah,
the
but you don't have that other argument you're trying to make. You just don't have it.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we think that's what...
Look,
if
the evidence is in conformity with crazy instructions, the problem is the instructions. The problem is not the sufficiency of the evidence. The evidence is quite sufficient given the instructions. You have to knock out the instructions. As Judge Bauer pointed out, it's only recently that plain error was even recognized as a possible ground for attacking civil instructions, but
we can agree to disagree on Propotnick. Nevertheless, it's certainly our submission that the evidence was not sufficient to support the verdict, even given the instructions.
No, but you're wrong
given.
About that. You're wrong.
The only evidence you're on.
You're wrong because the instructions say if you're on the wrong side of the street, you're liable unless there's an excuse.
Your Honor, that isn't so. It says...
All right. We want to go through the instructions. I'll read them to you if you don't remember them.
It says driven on the wrong side of the road.
Pardon?
It says driven on the wrong side of the road. There's no evidence here that Perry drove on the wrong side of the road. The only evidence is that his car...
Of course
he was on the wrong
driving.
Side of the road.
I mean, honestly, if you skid, you're driving, even if you don't have your foot on the pedal. And
I have a
that's it. And anyway, no jury would make that distinction. A jury would say he skidded and he drove across the street because he was in a skid, but he's still driving. That's a loser.
You think driving means he has to be intending where he's going?
Yes, I think the statute plainly...
Plainly. Oh, come on. Well, this is an instruction for jurors, not for logic-chopping lawyers.
Who've
spent months trying to figure out how they can get around the language of the instruction.
A rule of the road that drivers are to keep to the right side of the yellow line is not a rule that is intended to cover drivers
if
who fly
across. If you have an excuse, right? You have to have an excuse.
It's acceptable to the jury. I understand your point precisely. He said he wasn't driving because he didn't intend to be on that side of the road. He got flipped over there. He slipped over there.
Right.
But all those facts were before the jury, aren't they?
Those facts were.
So the argument to the jury is he was not driving on that side of the road. He didn't intend to be on that side of the road. He just skidded.
That's true.
I mean, the logic of your argument is that if someone is driving and he falls asleep and runs down a pedestrian, he wasn't driving. He was asleep.
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't see that kind of...
Well, of course, because it's ridiculous, right? Your argument is equally ridiculous. Whether you're sleeping or you're skidding, you're the driver. Do you want to argue plain error of instructions, or you want to give up on that?
No, certainly we have presented the
plain
error.
I don't think
argument.
That's a good argument, because, I mean, it's to Judge Bauer's point. You're going to reverse a civil case because of error instruction if there's some miscarriage of justice. I mean, if you feel that some terrible injustice has been done. But if CSX has to pay this guy who was injured, you have to pay him. No big deal. We'll never know for sure there was negligence.
Yeah, it's certainly a big deal to our client.
Doesn't cost me a dime. Go ahead.
How big is CSX?
I'm sorry?
How big is CSX?
I'm sure it's a large company. But
well, how big is it?
Your Honor,
you said it would be very painful to your clients. You must know something about your client's finances.
$1 million is a substantial judgment, how large you are.
Maybe it's teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. Is that it?
Certainly it isn't.
Isn't it a huge corporation?
It is a large corporation.
So it's not going to feel this, right? The shareholders aren't going to feel this.
Look, what would an excuse be? I envision something like, you're driving down the road and suddenly a child runs out in the road and you swerve to the other side. You're definitely driving to the other side. You're on the wrong side and you hit somebody.
I think actually, Your Honor, that would be...
But I think that's what you're trying to say, talk about driving. And you think, I guess you're saying it has to be that kind of an intentional excuse or something. So you have to have intent, whereas if you've been... I have a friend who was killed exactly the way this happened. Mm-hmm. We lost control and the car just T-boned him. Now, obviously the other driver didn't intend to do that.
Right. I suppose the circumstances depend on what leads to the skidding. In this case, it's our contention that the statute referenced in the jury instructions was not intended to cover cars that lose control over ice and only inadvertently inadvertently slide over the center line.
Into the you quit. You ought to shut up because you...
Yes, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Mr. Garmiza?
Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Garmiza here for the plaintiff appellee. Mr. Kevin,
let me jump in immediately at this front end. Who offered the instruction? Who tendered it?
That might have been the court's own instruction.
Well, adult,
Mr. Bruges. Okay.
Was it tendered by you or your party, your side?
It might have been by our...
No, I didn't want... who tendered the damn instruction? It's got to be listed as a plaintiff's instruction or a defendant's instruction. How is it listed?
But I think we might have...
You might have.
Yes.
Did you know at the time that it was an erroneous instruction?
We don't believe that it is.
You don't believe it's an erroneous instruction?
No.
I thought that was the one thing we could all rely on, that it was an erroneous instruction.
We don't interpret it. The Stapleton case, the U.S. Supreme Court case, said that you can't have a state statute that leads to automatic liability.
And that's what this one does.
No, it created a rebuttable presumption of negligence. And in Stapleton,
but it's very confusing. I mean, apart from what the Supreme Court has said, it's very confusing to give. It's just very confusing because the statute is very, you know, it's very telescoped. So it actually says things like, upon all roadways of sufficient width, a vehicle shall be driven upon the right half of the roadway. Well, that's a good general rule, right? But there are obviously circumstances in which it's not negligible, even if it's a wide road. There are plenty of cases where, right, the right might be blocked. You have a detour, so you're in the left lane. Yeah, there are lots. So this just states it very bluntly and inaccurately, and then it's left to this excuse business, which sounds as if it's shifting a burden of excuse to defendants. So it's very confusing for a jury, and was very gratuitous because the general negligence instruction covers it. You don't have to start reading sections of Indiana Code.
That's
it's very bad.
That's why I think any error was harmless.
Oh, for practical purposes, what this did was. Direct a verdict in favor of the plaintiff. But the real difficulty is, from his point of view, is that nobody objected. Apparently the defendant didn't complain about the instruction. The judge gave it when you urged it upon him. And so everybody was standing in what we used to call peri delicto. Everybody's holding a sack. But, I mean, I wouldn't bother defending the instruction if I were you. I just say this, so what? They didn't object to it. That's the place you got to stand.
I think
that it was not clear, manifest error, and no substantial injustice was done that would shock the conscience of the court.
Right.
That's your position.
Yes. If the court finds that the instruction was error, and I'm not going to beat that horse.
Attaboy.
I would say that it was harmless error because there was no grave injustice.
It wouldn't even be harmless error. It'd just be error that was nobody beefed about, that there was a failure to call the court's attention to it. Or complained about it at the time, and so the instruction was given apparently without objection from either side, no matter who tendered it.
I don't think that the railroad is entitled to an option to practice trial so that they could see, well, if we like the damages, we won't beef and we'll take those, we'll pay that if we think it's small enough. If we don't like it, if we think it's too big, we've got a ticket to a retrial. I don't think that's the way the plein air rule should operate. There was no grave injustice.
I might think $3 million plus is a grave injustice, but that's anything over $40 has always frightened me. So.
Well, anything,
you
know,
you need,
I guess,
$20 for a federal jury trial.
That's right. That's $20.
But it was harmless. It does not meet the high standards for a plain error analysis. There's just
what you really ought to do is set on the fact that you got very lucky and let it go at that.
But the these would be the instructions given to an Indiana in the state court. These were the Indiana pattern instructions.
I don't doubt it a bit.
They would be given. And so as defense counsel said to the judge, this should be treated like an ordinary negligence case. And the judge said, fine. And he did. And so it just doesn't meet the high standards. But it also, the jury was instructed they could make reasonable inferences based on their common sense and their experience with life. And
the experience here is that the irony is that the CSX is on both sides of the case. Drivers, employees in line of duty, I guess, have this collision. So the jury's looking at this and say, well, who's going to pay?
Well, that's why this is a case where I was unable to find a case where on a public highway, railroad van hits railroad pickup truck or the other way around, and so you've got it as an FELA case rather than an ordinary negligence case where, you know, if it was a diversity case and it was in federal court, the judge would have been given this negligence per se in terms of a rebuttable presumption of negligence. And that's no miscarriage, especially when
I wouldn't pour any of your bit on that. Not the facts of the case, but that's okay.
But the defense counsel, you know, asked the court to treat it like an ordinary negligence case, and everybody. Defense counsel did. Arguing for a directed finding, a judgment as a matter of law, and he said, you know, because Mr. Bruges was saying, you know, arguing about special standards under the FELA, and defense counsel said, no, this should be treated like an ordinary negligence case. And that's what the instruction did. And so it just doesn't even come close to the situation where there was a miscarriage of justice here. But the jury, they were entitled to draw reasonable inferences based on their common experience. They were told they could.
Yep.
And a common, I think most of us have memories, bad memories of being new drivers as kids and encountering ice and having bad things happen. And, you know, if we were lucky, we didn't go off the road. Unfortunately, I remember doing that. And I think the jurors know that if you just have to, and Mr. Perry admitted he knew it could be slippery. And there was testimony it was snowing. So it's December, it's 5:30 in the morning. It's snowing heavily, according to Mr. Roberts. Mr. Perry admits that he knows that it could be slippery, although he says it's perfect weather conditions and he was going to drive like he usually intended, and that he says he was only going 20 miles an hour. And the jury was entitled to say, no, that you don't go from right side of the road on a four-lane highway over the curb, into oncoming traffic, whack an oncoming van if you're going only 20 miles an hour. He had to be going faster than that. Now, counsel is saying, but we didn't say, you know, well, was he going 37 miles an hour or 36 miles an hour?
You made your point.
Going at
you made
24?
Your point. I understand what your argument is. I'm sure both of my compatriots know.
Okay. Then I will shut up and sit down.
Sound idea.
We'll shut up and sit down and rest on my brief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Garmisa. Mr. Kimberly, time.
So a few points of clarifications, Your Honor. First, we did object to the instruction. We objected for lack of evidentiary foundation for giving it.
Where the record shows that you objected to the instruction?
Yes,
to dismiss.
Yes, not on the basis that
It was an erroneous statement of the law. But
right. It was an objection on the basis that there was insufficient evidence for giving it, which is what rolls into our sufficiency of the evidence argument on appeal.
Yes.
With respect to the jury being instructed on the question of excuse,
Mr. Garmisa correct when he said that CSX's lawyer had said to the judge, let's treat it like a regular court case?
That's really quite, in my view, a striking misrepresentation of what happened below. In fact, that comment was made in response to an argument by plaintiff's counsel that special negligence standards apply under FELA, that there's a lowered burden of proof for going to the jury.
And the response was it should be treated like a normal negligence.
The response was that the standard under FELA is precisely the same as under any other negligence case. Now, that was an argument that had nothing whatsoever to do with the question of negligence per se. It had nothing whatsoever to do with the instructions.
Well, he was right in saying that your lawyer said treat this as a regular negligence case, not as special duties or anything else.
The argument was that the plaintiff doesn't get any easier a pass under FELA.
He does, of course.
But look, the argument had nothing whatsoever to do with the question of negligence.
I understand
the notion that we invited this.
But he didn't make up he didn't make up the language of the objection. He just it has a little different implication depending on how you look at it.
Right. And now just one final brief point. The court has made a lot of the fact that the instruction included an excuse element. It does bear mention that repeatedly Roberts' counsel before the jury argued that in fact, statutory violations are not excusable, and that if the jury found, so if I may, the defense was purportedly raised in the opening statement, I'm quoting now.
Was objection made to that statement, by the way, when he used that in argument?
No, there was not. But he argued before the jury that driving safely is not a defense to statutory violations, and we all know that. And there were several other occasions of similar comments as
but
well.
But no objection.
No objection, but certainly the jury could have been confused and misled into believing that.
I almost got confused myself, but go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you very much, both counsel. Next case.